Did you know that the first Christmas carols dedicated to the birth of Christ were written down in the 4th and 5th centuries? But it wasn't until the 13th century when St. Francis of Assisi incorporated upbeat hymns into High Christmas Mass that the carol was born. Caroling in the 16th century was a way for peasants to sing for their supper, so to speak. They would sing and entertain the Lord and receive a nice round of Christmas table scraps in return. The tradition continued until Old Stick in the Mud, Ollie Cromwell, Lord Protector of England, banned it from 1649 to 1660. It wasn't until Victorian times in the mid-1800s that the tradition regained its popularity.
Welcome to the Lore of the South, the Christmas edition.
Merry Christmas, y'all, and welcome back to Lore of the South with me, Kelly Cruz. How the heck are y'all doing? It is not only the happiest, merriest, and brightest time of the year, it's also the busiest. How about for y'all? We have got so much stuff planned. I was just looking at our calendar, and I think there is only 1 week this month that we don't have something going on outside of work. Between family get-togethers, and then I guess I can go ahead and say it because he knows about the surprise now. We all know that we're big fans of Universal and Islands of Adventure down in Orlando, Florida. So there's a company called Orlando Informer, and they host events at the parks for after hours. So you pay a fee, you get to go in starting at like 5 p.m. after the park is closed, and then the park closes early, excuse me. And all of your food and non-alcoholic beverages are included in the ticket price. Plus, it's very limited entry, so there's little to no wait times to get on rides. And I believe that even like the arcades and things like that are set to free play for ticket holders to this special event. So I'll have to let y'all know how that goes on our next episode. And what else are we doing? What else is left over for this month? Other than the main event of Christmas. Oh, this year, we're going to spend Christmas in Savannah, which will be a first for us, and we're really looking forward to it. Can't wait to see that old city decked out in lights. And with that, I would like to welcome y'all to the weird Christmas episode of 2022, and maybe we'll even sneak in a ghost story. We cannot break from that tradition, y'all. Plus, ghost stories are my favorite. And also, oh my gosh, how could I forget this? It's our second birthday. We launched December 14th of 2020. So happy birthday to us, Lore of the South.
Congratulations!
For our history-making news, I wanted to bring you some Christmas history-making news. This story comes from the New York Post and Heritage Daily. St. Nicholas was a Greek bishop who lived between 270 and 343 CE, and is who Santa Claus is based on. St. Nick was known to give gold to the poor, especially to children. He was known to calm the seas with prayer. He chopped down a demon-possessed tree. St. Nick saved and prevented three girls from being sold into prostitution by their destitute father. Upon the oldest daughter's coming of age, seemingly magically, a small purse flew through an open window. This money provided a good dowry and kept the family fed and a roof over their heads. When the next daughter came of age, the same thing happened. But then, when the third girl reached maturity, the father was ready to catch the family's benefactor and closed the window shutters and sat in wait. Well, since it was summer and the fireplace would be cold, old St. Nick threw the purse down the chimney, and the legend of St. Nicholas coming down the chimney at Christmas time was born. He saved the lives of three wrongfully accused soldiers and prevented their deaths. He was even said to have brought back from the dead three children who a butcher had murdered and pickled their bodies in hopes to later sell them as pork during a famine. St. Nicholas is the patron saint of sailors, merchants, archers, repentant thieves, children, brewers, pawnbrokers, and students. His tomb has been located in Dimri, Turkey. The UNESCO site has been under excavation since 2017, and they have finally uncovered the layer of the church that the bishop would have actually set foot on. It's hoped that some of his remains still may be intact, though it's not known for certain. The tomb was raided in the 1000s by crusaders, and some of his remains were stolen and taken back to Bari, Italy, and enshrined there. But this wasn't meant to be St. Nick's final resting place. Sometime in 1096, a group of Venetian sailors broke into the basilica and stole a bit more of the saint's remains, and took them back to Venice with them, where their bit of St. Nick was enshrined in the St. Nico Monastery and Basilica. So, back to the original tomb. The reason that it is unknown if any of the saint's remains are still intact in his original burial place is because, well, the level of his burial chamber is now below sea level. The church was flooded in the Middle Ages, and another built on top of its flooded remains. So whatever is left of the old saint is now protected by a watery grave. So last year we talked about the Yule Lads and some Christmas time hauntings in the UK. This year I think we'll go for some more odd Christmas traditions from around the world. Welcome to episode 56, Dreaming of a Weird Christmas. Where to even start? Y'all, humans are strange and creative creatures, and I really enjoyed compiling this list for y'all. There are some doozies in here. Let's start off with a group I knew very little about, Christmas witches. So the thought on how Christmas witches got their start predates Christianity in Europe. They probably came from pagan traditions, as most things do, that centered around the winter solstice. Then, like nearly everything else, their lore was consumed by the new Catholic Church to make it palatable for the masses. For instance, La Befana is thought to be an incarnation of either an ancient Roman goddess of the new year, Strina, or maybe the ghost of a past loved one that returns every year during the period around the winter solstice. She's said to ride either a goat or a broom. In some stories, she gathers naughty children in a sack and brings them home to her cannibalistic husband for his dinner. In other stories, good children receive sweets, while bad kids receive actual coal or sometimes candy that only looks like coal. But her story goes beyond this. Some accounts place her in the time of the Nativity itself, and she actually played host to the wise men on their way to see the baby Jesus. They offered to bring her along, but she declined, only to change her mind later and follows in their trail. Once she reaches the baby, he deems her the protector of children. Now, I don't know how a newborn infant deems anybody anything, but he was the Christ child, so I guess he could do that. And from then on, once a year, she visits the homes of children and leaves them treats and will even do some sweeping up if it need be. And in Norway, it's customary on Christmas Eve to hide your broom. Wonder if that includes Swiffers. Because if you don't, then surely a witch that is out roaming the night in the freezing cold will steal your broom for a joyride around the countryside. And then how will you clean your floors once all the Christmas festivities are over? How about one more witch? I like things in threes. This lady was once a German sky goddess, and her daily activities are what once controlled the weather. Rain was brought about by washing day, and a cloudy sky was her wash hung on the giant clotheslines in the sky to dry. Many called her Mother Hulda. And not only did she have a hand in meteorology, but she also took pity and cared for the ghosts or spirits of the dead, especially those of children and babies. She'd care for them and see them into the afterlife. It is tradition to set a place for her at your table for Christmas dinner, and by doing so, it will bring you good luck into the coming new year. You know, I thought about covering Krampus, but y'all, nearly everyone knows about this guy these days. He's a goat man in a Santa suit that shows up on December 5th, known as Krampusnacht. He then kidnaps bad children, stuffs them into sacks, and beats them with switches. The tale of Krampus comes to us from Austria and Germany, and they still have festivals dedicated to him every year. I recommend the Blurry Photos podcast for some good Krampus history and stories. The Two Davids did an awesome job with it. They even go live at one point from a Krampusnacht festival up north somewhere. So check them out for more details on the old goat man. So let's move along to the Yule Cat. I'm not sure if I mentioned this giant cat last year or not, but he belongs to Grilla and the Yule Lads, and is a Icelandic tradition. He ventures out on Christmas Eve, and he's an enormous beast, as large as a house, and he takes his job as a four-legged member of the fashion police very seriously. In Icelandic tradition, good children and industrious children will receive a new set of clothing each year for Christmas. Well, if the Yule Cat is out prowling and doing his rounds and happens to run across any urchins in old tattered clothes, he gobbles them down. Iceland has many traditions about working hard, and slackers are not allowed. Next up is Ye Old Yule Goat. Now, I love this guy and the tradition of the Yule Goat. It goes all the way back to the Norse worship of Thor, who had two flying goats named Teeth Grinder and Teeth Bearer, who pulled his chariot through the sky. This story morphed over time into an invisible goat who oversaw the harvest and made sure that the Yule decorations were done properly. If they were, the magic goat would leave gifts for the family. In modern traditions, in towns all over Sweden, they construct enormous straw goats in effigy of the past traditions. Also, it's common to have a miniature goat made of straw that the neighbors would secretly hide in one another's houses for the family to find later as a prank. When found, the neighbors who received the joke goat will return the favor by hiding it in the original neighbor's house the following year. Y'all, I had to come back and add this in, so please forgive me. I nearly forgot about the Christmas poopers. And there was no way I was going to be talking about Christmas poopers after the last little story you'll get to hear in a minute. So I guess we're kind of time traveling here. So in the future, you'll get to hear the sweet little story that I'm not going to talk about poopers afterwards. And these Christmas poopers. We're not talking about classic South Park Christmas special Mr. Hankey. We're talking about pooping logs and a nativity scene gatecrasher. Both traditions come to us from Spain. Cagatillo, the pooping log, or Tio Nadal, Christmas log if you prefer, is a four-legged log with a painted face who wears a red hat. The Christmas log arrives a week or so before Christmas, and each night the children feed the log until he is covered from his log neck down his back with a blanket. And then the children sing this song. Y'all, I ain't singing the song, but I'll recite it for you. Poop log, log of Christmas. Don't poop salted herring, they are too salty. Poop turons, which is like nougat, apparently. They are much better. When the song is over, the children then commence to beating the log with wooden spoons and sticks, hoping to beat the literal poop out of it. Then they all say their prayers and go to bed. In the morning, they raise the blanket and old poop log, Cagatillo, is gone, and he leaves behind candies, toys, and other goodies for the children. Now, our second pooper is also from the same region of Spain as the pooping log. This guy is called El Cagnir, the crapper. He is dressed in peasant-type clothing from Catalonia, down to the red cap on his head. He squatted his way into the nativity scene sometime in the late 1600s or early 1700s, always lurking off to one side, maybe hiding behind a camel. He'd be slightly hidden, dropping trow with a full moon shining, while leaving his own presence, so to speak. But why? I mean, for real, why? There are two theories behind our crapper. The first being that El Cagnard was fertilizing the earth. The other is a bit more tongue-in-cheek, and I like it the best. The crapper shows us that you just never know when Jesus might show up, and don't be caught with your pants down. Have you ever spotted what you may consider an odd ornament in someone's tree and thought, where the heck did that tradition come from? Like a pickle or a spider web or even maybe a shoe? My grandma was nearly all German, or Swiss German if you will. I think she was the first generation in her family that they didn't grow up speaking German, all due to a couple of world wars that made Germany pretty unpopular. But I digress. My point is that I had never heard of a pickle in a tree until I worked for Michael's Crafts, and we sold pickle ornaments. Maybe this just wasn't a tradition in the region her family came from? I don't know. But here's why you might find a lucky pickle in a tree, and there are a few variations of the tale. We'll go oldest to newest. So the pickle might not be German after all. In one tale, Saint Nick, while in Spain, saved two boys who had been kidnapped and imprisoned inside of a pickle barrel. There must have been a lot of kid pickling back in the day. Also, that Saint Nick got around. Another story, this one from the American Civil War, talks about a POW on Christmas Eve who was on the verge of starvation. He begs the guard for anything at all to eat and is given a pickle. The soldier later credited the pickle to saving his life. And from then on, each Christmas, he'd hide a pickle in the tree for his children to find. And in our last pickle explanation, runs along the same lines as, like, how Hallmark invented Valentine's Day. In the 1890s, department stores began importing glass ornaments from Germany, many of which were shaped like vegetables. So in a marketing campaign, the pickle was promoted as an ornament with a game. Hide the pickle in the tree, and whoever finds it first will have good luck and get a special gift. Shoes. So this one has origins in Holland. There, instead of stockings, or Christmas socks as my kids used to call them, they set out their shoes by the fire for Sinterklaas to fill with candies, fruits, and toys. So in a way to keep this tradition, you might spot a pair of wooden shoes in the branches of our modern Christmas trees. And lastly, we have the Ukrainian tradition of spiderweb ornaments. This tradition is probably as old as the Christmas tree itself. Here we have a poor widow with young children. The family is barely scraping by, but the widow is very kind and willing to share what little she has. She's even kind to the house spider that lives in a dark corner of the small cold hut. The widow never once swept away the spider's little web while she cleaned. The little spider took note of this and of the widow's kindnesses. The morning of Christmas Eve, the children surprise their mother with a Christmas tree. She hugs them all and helps them put the little tree on a three-legged stool so that it will have the place of pride in their home. She puts the children to bed, and soon the happiness is replaced with sadness once the widow realizes she has nothing to decorate the tree with. She finishes up the night with some sewing and her chores and goes to bed, fearing that she will disappoint her children when they awaken the next morning to the same scrawny tree without so much as a straw goat on it. Night passes, and she is awakened at first light by the sounds of cheering and happy children. She wraps a shawl around her shoulders and hurries to see why the children are so excited. There, glistening in the morning light, is a tree transformed by shining lace-like webs covering the evergreen. And in one dark corner of the cold little hut, a spider rested, after a long night of spinning. Side notes. So, what the heck is Yule anyway? I thought it might be a good idea to give a brief explanation of the term I threw around quite liberally. Yule is a 10-day celebration that starts at the winter solstice, which occurs either on December 21st or the 22nd. The celebration is a way to welcome back the sun and has been celebrated since humans started watching the skies. Well, what did y'all think about our weird Christmas traditions? There are a few new ones in there for me. Do you think that y'all will add any of those traditions to yours? Y'all, I'm scared to death of spiders, but I might have to find a spider web ornament. I hope y'all enjoyed this year's Christmas special. I'm going to forego our oldest buildings by state and give some Christmas shout-outs and following suggestions. Check out Sydney Rose on Instagram and TikTok. Her username is The Needle Woman. She's a reenactor up at Old Fort Jackson in Savannah who designs and creates all of her period-perfect costumes. Check out Annika Edenfield on TikTok and Instagram as well. She does frequent live tours of the city of Savannah and nearby cemeteries and graveyards. She's a journalist, tour guide, and roller derby extraordinaire, and one of my favorite follows. Eerie Lights is another good follow on Instagram. This is the great David Weatherly's page. He has a mind for the paranormal and all things cryptid. He is also the author of dozens of books about those subjects. Lastly, let's give a super Merry Christmas to the crew at Monsters Among Us. This was one of the very first podcasts I ever listened to and really got me thinking about starting my own. Host Derek and his crew Sarah and Addie have a great social media platform to go along with the podcast. They keep it all family friendly and provide a platform for folks into the paranormal. And every Wednesday, they allow little guys like Laura the South to promote their shows on the Monsters Among Us fan page. So if you haven't already, give Monsters Among Us a listen and a follow. If you want to get in touch, you can email the show at laurathesouth@gmail.com. Follow us on social media, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook. I always post pictures to go along with each episode. And producer Mike likes to put together, I guess you could call them TikTok previews of upcoming episodes. If you really liked what you hear, leave us a review, 5 stars and a few kind words. We also have a Patreon. You can check it out at The Lore of the South. And I'll also post links to go along with that. And with that, we'll talk to y'all later on Lore of the South.
If you loved what you've heard, check out the Patreon page for exclusive content by searching for The Lore of the South on Patreon.com.
Did y'all think I'd forget your Christmas ghost story? No way. Though, do know that the tradition of telling ghost stories at Christmas didn't necessarily mean that the story was about Christmas. And also, maybe there's no ghost. But it is scary. And maybe true. So on with our scary and maybe true ghost story, or not so ghost story. Marjorie McCall was a woman who lived once but died twice. Marjorie was the wife of a small village doctor, John McCall, in the early 1700s Ireland. The couple was a happy one and had a couple of children, and things seemed to be going well until Marjorie became ill. The illness set in quickly. She was feverish to the point of hallucinations and febrile seizures. John and a female family member nursed her until the end, when Marjorie seemingly passed. They hurried through the week and promptly buried dear Marjorie in hopes of preventing the spread of whatever had infected her. The mourners carried the coffin of Marjorie McCall to the graveyard and lowered her into the ground. A father said a few words over the deceased, and the mourners began to depart, last of all John and the children. Reluctantly, John and the children returned home without wife and mother. As darkness settled in, a couple of grave robbers were waiting for their chance to raid the fresh grave. They easily shoveled out the freshly dug earth until they reached Marjorie's coffin. Using an iron stake, they pried off the lid and found the late Marjorie resting peacefully. The grave robbers quickly patted down the body, looking for valuables. They found what they were looking for on Marjorie's left hand. The pair of thieves tried and tried to pry the ring from her hand, but it was stuck fast. So what did the two do? They took a knife and decided to cut the ring from Marjorie's hand. At the first slice, Marjorie sat up shrieking. The grave robbers fell over themselves trying to clamber out of the grave. And let's say that those were probably scared straight. And let us say that those two were probably scared straight onto the straight and narrow, if you know what I mean. That left poor Marjorie all alone in her open grave, shockingly recovered from her comatose state. She then pulled herself from the grave and began to walk home in the cold night. At the house of John McCall, he was serving his children a late supper when they heard a rapping at the door. John turned to the children and said, "If I hadn't just buried your poor mother, I'd think that that was her knocking upon the door." He goes to open the door, and there stands his once dead wife in her burial gown, sliced finger, dripping blood. John immediately faints fast away, and it's said that his hair turned white overnight. John and Marjorie both recovered from their ordeals and go on to have more children. They live happily ever after, and dear Marjorie will forever be known as the woman who lived once but died twice. And you can visit her grave in Lurgan, Ireland today. And yes, there are many versions of this story, but I chose the one with the happiest ending to share with you all. Merry Christmas, Lore of the South listeners. We appreciate you so.